me out of my job.
So he wanted a bribe from Fidel.
From the Cuban government.
If you wanted to have a reporter who...
That's correct. But let me tell you this. This is very, very serious because you nowadays read about massacres. 25 peasants killed. What's happening in Chiapas? What's happening in Guerrero? What's happening in Oaxaca? What's happening in many states in Baja California? In Chihuahua, in the center of Mexico, the Huastecas. None of those things were said 30 years ago, 35 years ago. It was complete silence. And the worst crimes were committed at those times. The worst. Young people massacred, young people executed, young people disappear. Nobody will say a word. I never read a word on those things. But when the AP, the French press, the Italian ANSA will reproduce my reporting results from our fellow countrymen, our fellow journalists, not a word. Mm. And not a word from the big newspapers in the United States. Not a word. Nothing happens.
1968, Mexico City, the students...
That's correct.
...were protesting. It's been happening now. I mean, there's been hundreds of people were arrested at the university in Mexico City. I was just reading today a report that's in The Nation magazine where a reporter was there with the students when the cops came in, and it was a pretty horrific sight. But I think that's nothing compared to what happened in 1968.
That's correct.
A similar situation.
I will tell you this. After I resigned as a director of that magazine, Sucesos, I invited the young people and people with money from my own state, from Yucatan. Let's join an adventure. Let's make journalism revive in Mexico City. Let's continue with this crusade. And some of them went with me. They went with me, and we founded a magazine which was called Por Qué, a question, why? That was the title. Well, I got in problems too immediately because Por Qué was born in 1968, and in 1968 was that student movement. And let me tell you, nobody, no newspaper, no magazine, publish a single word on what really happened on Wednesday, October the 2nd, 1968. More than 1,000 young students were killed. And the only magazine that said what really happened was our magazine. And again, that magazine did not exist. And that journalist, that's me, did not exist. That was an order given by the president. Disappear all the magazines. Anyone that is surprised with one magazine, a copy of that magazine, will go to jail. Subversion, they called it. And I went to jail too. I went 2 years to jail. But let me tell you, that was a beautiful period, because it was the biggest circulation a magazine, a political magazine, has ever achieved in the history of Latin America. Por Qué sold 1 million copies. And the students were the ones that were in charge of the distribution, the circulation, and the recollecting the money. And just 30,000 pesos of those days were not put back in the treasury because the student that was bringing that money was kidnapped by the police, and they took that money from him. The honesty was present in every student 32 years ago. Well, that I went to jail for that.
Now, the movement at the university, what I was reading in The Nation is that what we're discussing here is really a movement against increasing fees for students at the university.
Not in 1968.
It was different.
In 1968, it was different. It started with the brawl between students that were brutally repressed by the police. So all the students got together and wanted justice. And that the chief of police was—they bring him to trial, and they also call for the disappearance of the body, the group, the most terrible repressive group that existed in those days in Mexico, and also they wanted to disappear an article of the Constitution that will accuse you of a social dissolution. And will send you to jail for treason to the country, for anything that the government will please to make. Mm-hmm. And also they asked for the freedom of the political prisoners from the old railroad movement of 1958, 10 years before. Those were the main...
Wow. Mario Menendez, the editor of Por Esto in Yucatan, the third largest daily in Mexico. I'm Paul DiRienzo with Miss Joan Marie Musi. This is Let Him Talk on WBAI. It's about 8 minutes after two. And we're discussing the conference that's coming up, Latinos in the United States, the evolving relationship with Latin America.
That's this weekend at Columbia Law School.
Right. It's at Columbia Law School, which is at 435 West 116th Street at the corner of Amsterdam Avenue and 116th. You can take the 1 or the 9 train to 116th Street. And let's see, Mr. Menendez will be appearing from 3 to 5 p.m. on the 4th, Saturday the 4th of March, in a panel discussion with Al Giordano, who's our other guest here, on the drug war. And so let's move things up. What happened after you were spent 2 years in jail? Did you come back and continue as a journalist in 1970?
Not so fast.
Yeah. I mean, you got to get locked up for printing a muckraking mind-bending
report. And they blew up his magazine with a bomb.
There's a lot to the story.
Al knows Mexican history.
Yeah, Al, jump in for all the stuff that Mr. Menendez won't tell us.
He's an expert on political.
All the biographical.
You have to realize, Al Giordano has spent the last 2.5 years in Mexico. He comes up every once in a while, but basically you've been down there the whole time in southern Mexico mostly and following the Zapatistas. So you are an expert. You're the Mexico correspondent for the Boston Phoenix, and you know as much as anybody I know about what's going on in Mexico. So please jump right in.
And as Paul and Joni and some of the listeners of Let Him Talk know, I've been long disillusioned with the media and with the press. It was the subject of a lot of my writings in 1996 and 97, and had pretty much resigned from the profession when I went to Mexico. And it really was in meeting Mario Menendez a year ago that I began to see that perhaps journalism, real journalism, isn't dead yet. When I first encountered an article written by Mario Menendez in Por Esto, it was the week of Valentine's Day last year, a year ago. And it was the week that President Bill Clinton had just been escaped his impeachment problem with Congress, and two days later he hopped on an airplane to Mérida to have an anti-drug summit with Mexican President Ernesto Zedillo.
Mérida, by the way, is the capital of the Yucatan, which is that part of Mexico that sort of sticks out in the south into
in the Caribbean.
Caribbean, right? For people who are geographically challenged,
Cancun
is
3 hours
there.
Away from Cancun.
Right. The entire White House press corps was there, and they apparently didn't bother to go out in the streets and read the local papers, because I read in Mr. Menendez's daily newspaper, Por Esto, that the host of the anti-drug summit between the two presidents, Clinton and Zedillo, was the most powerful banker in Mexico, who himself was a money launderer and a drug trafficker. And poor Esther went further than just saying that he was a money launderer and drug trafficker. They went and took pictures of the cocaine on his properties. Very dangerous job his reporters did. They're very valiant journalists. Pictures of the cocaine containers washed up on his beaches, the 43 kilometers of pristine beaches and Mayan ruins that this man has bought up. His name is Roberto Hernandez. He's the president of the National Bank of Mexico, or Banamex. And the fact that Bill Clinton and Ernesto Cedillo were holding their anti-drug summit at this man's property seemed a little funny, because Menendez didn't just publish this the week they came to town. He published it 2 years earlier and continued to publish this story on and on. And when I read his three-part series, and when I took note that nobody in the U.S. press corps, there were 300 United States reporters there, and no one even mentioned this controversy, I went down to the offices of Poresto and asked to see the person who wrote this article, because I wanted to find out for myself if this was true, that the president of the United States is holding his anti-drug summits on narco properties. Well, this tells us something about the sincerity of the drug war and what it's really all about. I did not know at this time that Mario Menendez had been the first journalist to interview Fidel Castro. I did not know that he had a life sentence, what had previously been a death sentence, hanging over his head in Colombia, one that still hangs over his head, for having reported for 2 months with the guerrilla movement, the ELN, in Colombia. I did not know that he was the journalist chosen by the FMLN in El Salvador to live with them for a number of months and report on who their leaders were, or that he had walked with the guerrilla in Guatemala, or that he had spent time with General Giap of Vietnam when he in the 1970s, while he was defending his victory that he had won against the United States of America. All I knew is that somebody was writing a story about the truth, about the drug war. We're not here with somebody who's resting on his laurels. We're here with somebody who's involved on the front lines of an international battle that has grave consequences, and he needs our support here in New York and here in the United States of America so that the Mexican government and the U.S. government understand that the American people are behind people who tell the truth, like Mario Menendez. And for this, Kiovanna Rodriguez is here with the Columbia Students Group. And Kiovanna, what time and when can we see and hear Mario Menendez in person at Columbia University this Saturday?
Oh, I'm getting
also,
so excited.
I think we should make a point that it's open to the public.
It's open to the public.
It's free.
And it's actually, the symposium is actually all day long. If people just want to come and make a day of it, there's going to be lunch from 12:30 to 2 provided by us. There's registration that starts in the morning and breakfast that will
all right,
be served.
People, free food.
Free food from 9:30 to 10. And then we have three panels before the drug war panel, which is one on immigration from 10:30 to 11:30, one on law and development from 11:30 to 12:30. Then we have lunch also provided by us. And then 2 to 3 is the census, because we need to start talking about how we have no idea about how many Latinos are actually living in this country, and they're so underreported because they're all hiding. And even though census officials assure them that this is not government information, that they won't get in trouble or be deported, they won't report. So we have no idea what the true numbers of Latinos are working and living in this country. And then finally, for the grand finale from 3 to 5, the drug war panel. And this is really going to be excellent. We're going to make history here. And not only is this Mr. Menendez's first time to come to a prestigious university and speak in the United States, but this is also a community. The Columbia community has a thriving activist law student community that has founded the first drug policy student organization in the country. Columbia Law School, last year, for some friends and I, we founded Columbia Law Students for Enacting Humane Drug Policies, and we made history because never before, and you ask yourself, it's the year 2000, how can there not be law students that are organizing to focus on drug policy reform when we're spending $40 billion a year combined federal and state money on this drug war, a war against Americans, a war against their own citizens? So really, this is incredibly exciting. We have the number one intellectual activist drug policy reformer in the country, Ethan Nadelman, who will also be on the panel with Al Giordano and Mario Menendez, again from 3 to 5 at the law school, free of charge, open to the public. You don't need to come for the whole symposium. But again, we'll have goodies all throughout the day.
And give the address again.
High energy. Giovanna. Of course, the law school is located on 435 West 116th Street. This is at the corner of Amsterdam and 116th Street. If you want more information, you can telephone 212-932-9012, or you can also email LALSLA, that's LALSA, at law.columbia.edu. That's LALSLA, Latin American Law Students Association, at law.columbia.edu. So any questions or concerns, otherwise, just show up to the law school.
Yeah, we'll just see you there.
Okay, and the number again was 212-932-9012 for more information.
And the number here is
212-209-2900.
So call us up so you can talk to our guests.
I need to make one quick correction. The panel will be in room 107 of the brand new law student building. Registration's in the address that I just gave, but the actual panel is in room 107 of the new law student building on Amsterdam Avenue between 115th and 116th, room 107.
Okay, room 107, and that's the 3rd and the 4th of March. We're going to take calls in a minute. There's so much, though, I want to get to because it's a little bit more. I want to link what's been happening now with what was happening in 1968, early 1970s. You were forced out of the country, out of Mexico?
Well, let me tell you. I was put in jail, and they accused me of all the, ¿cómo se dice? Delitos.
Crimes.
Of all the crimes you can ever imagine. And the lawman asked 30 years against me.
30 years?
30 years. So I had to laugh because it was funny. It was a political...
But how he got out of jail is very interesting. You know, we all read the communiques of Subcomandante Marcos of the Zapatistas these days. This model was invented in the early 1970s when a couple of guerrilla movements in the state of Guerrero, also in southern Mexico, led by Genaro Vázquez and Lucio Cabañas, were publishing communiques, and Porqué, Mario's magazine, was publishing these communiques uncensored, unedited. For this, they blew up his office and put him in jail.
Around the same time, that happened to our Houston affiliate in Houston, Texas, of the Pacifica News. Somebody, the Ku Klux Klan, blew up our transmitter.
Yep. Is that right?
Right, in early 1970s.
This was all part of a plan out of Washington.
Yes.
But
right in the height of
using
all
a lot of bombs.
The guerrilla movement then kidnapped the director of Coca-Cola for the region. And in exchange for his freedom, they got 40 political prisoners released, including Mario. But the Mexican government, in place of releasing Mario to the public, put him on a military plane, took away his passport, and dropped him off in Cuba, where he remained exiled for 10 years.
That's correct.
And you were allowed back after 10 years?
No, yes, but...
Coca-Cola.
When I was there, I had the opportunity. You know, they gave you the opportunity. Either you study or you work. Well, I thought to myself, well, I can work, but I wanted to finish my degree. So besides the journalist... I went for philosophy.
Oh, right.
That
was my major, too.
That's right. I got a PhD in philosophy. 10 years later, they allowed me to come back to Mexico after a very frank negotiation with the president of Mexico, which started... I don't know how you call the Masons, the group, the fraternity, Masones.
Here, the Freemasons or the Masons exist here too, yeah.
Okay. Well, the Masons asked López Portillo to allow me to come back. López Portillo said, well, I want to know in what conditions, what are his conditions. So the biggest Mason went to Cuba, talked with me, with my brother, and I explained it's very simple. I want them to give me back my rights as a Mexican citizen, give back my passport. Second, I want to come back as a journalist. I want to work as a journalist. And third, I want to have indemnización pago.
Compensation?
Compensation, correct. The compensation for the damage they did to our machinery in 1974. That was a ridiculous amount of money because I was we are talking of 1980, and money was devaluated many times. The president saw what was my intention. He says, I don't have no objection for him to get his passport. I don't have no objection for him to come back as a newspaper man. But I do not want the same title of the magazine back in the streets. I could not call it why, por qué. I didn't say what was my answer. And also, I understand what he's searching for the compensation. That's a political decision from Mario. I want to talk that personally with him. So I flew to Mexico in a very secret mission. I spoke with the president, and he told me, you're not going to fool me. You want that compensation because in the moment I recognized that amount of money, the state of Mexico is recognizing that they violated the Constitution and attacked the freedom of the press. And I'm not going to accept that. Well, if you don't accept that, Mr. President, I'll go back to Cuba or another 10 years. But he wanted to go to Cuba. And he could not go fly to Cuba having a political prisoner in there. A Mexican political. Right, I was not a prisoner in Cuba. I was free there.
Right.
He finally decided, okay, I give up. You can go back. You can come back. So that's how I returned to Mexico. And I returned to Mexico with Por Esto, but as a magazine.
You changed the name and you changed the format.
And he asked me, you laughing at me, he told me. You did not put why. You said because of this, huh? And he
said, that's why.
That's why.
Por Esto means that's why.
That's right. That's why. But he forgot about it. That year, then, 1981, they wanted to give me the National Award journalist. I said, you go baloney with all that, man. Those awards are political. Mm. I don't need those type of awards. The awards I want, the people give it to me, not you.